This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And if you're watching us on YouTube at the Team 980, you see that I'm in a different place yet again. In a very silly twist of events, for the third time in a week, I am broadcasting from somewhere ahead of an Indiana Fever game. That's because I was in Indiana last week to see Aces Fever as they played a couple of games. But tonight, Caitlin Clark and company are in town in D.C. to close their regular season against the Mystics. The game is enormous for Washington. They need to win to have a chance to get in. If they do, there is a very good chance they would get in because they would need a Chicago loss, and Chicago is free-falling and playing a better opponent. And the Atlanta Dream, the other team they need to lose, are facing the New York Liberty, and they are obviously very good, as the Mystics found out yet again firsthand on Tuesday, number one seed in the entire WNBA. And so that is the situation playoff-wise going into tonight. We'll get back to that and a bunch of other stuff going on in the W. It's actually a fairly significant news, like 36 hours here, with Kareem Copeland, who's going to be on set with us at 5 o'clock. But mostly football, as you would imagine, today, as we get ready for Monday Night Football next week and the Commanders get back to work. Today is their Wednesday. Of course, just everything shifted a day based off of the Monday Night Football schedule. And Thursday is always a fun day for me because at this point in the week, because we record Take Command in the morning, I have taken a look at the film for the other team and have some semblance of kind of what it is that makes them go, and talked to Logan about it. And so we recorded a preview that is out, and we'll give you a little bit tomorrow here on the radio. And obviously you can check it out on demand whenever you like. But it's an interesting matchup because offensively, they don't do anything that complicated, Cincinnati. And the complicated stuff is where Washington has really struggled so far this year. They have struggled to fit game plan style runs, traps, whams, draws, things that are meant to take advantage of some of the stuff they're doing, as opposed to just line up and, like, let's get off a block on a duo play. Think halfback dive in Madden. Let's just get off a block and make a tackle. They've struggled more so with the other stuff. They've struggled with, like, stacks and bunches and communicating in the secondary. And Cincinnati, so far this year, doesn't really do a lot of that stuff. Now, the reason why they don't do a lot of that stuff is the part that's terrifying, which is they don't particularly need to. It's an offense built on the fact that they have Joe Burrow. And it's so funny, interesting, whatever word you want to put here that kind of fits in that family, to watch an offense just go, yeah, we're good at all times. To see how it affects the game planning, to see how it affects the play calling, to see how it affects how they manage a football game, because they don't have to take a lot of risks. Because at the end of the day, if they get stuck in, you know, they run the ball quite a bit on first down, for instance, but they're not that good at it. But they know we don't want to take a sack. We don't want to, you know, take too much risk. So if we run, get 2 yards and it's second and eight, we'll just run a spacing concept and have five guys run hooks on second down, and we're going to have Joe Burrow pick the right one. And like 75-80% of the time, he's going to do that. We're going to get 5 yards, and we've gone from second and eight to third and three, and now the world is our oyster. That's a cheat code. That's not fair. You can't just spread three receivers out, one back, one tight end, simple stuff, or maybe even you go two tight ends, but pretty basic formations, and just be like, we're guaranteed 5 yards because our quarterback can take a shotgun snap, survey the field, and hit who, like, whichever is the proper guy and read out any coverage. That's shooting fish at a barrel. But that is exactly how Cincinnati is able to operate, because Burrow, in that quick game element, is that freaking good. And so it's really wild to watch. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but again, to manage second and long. And, like, the Commanders have done this so far this season in a very different way. They've found ways to be in good down and distances or overcome bad down and distances because Jaden's been able to scramble so effectively. And so their plan is kind of just like, hey, send everybody away and wait for the rush to go by, and then Jaden will pick up the yardage. And not that that's the plan, but that's how it's played out. And for Burrow, it's like very low risk of sack, very low risk of interception, very low risk, frankly, of incompletion in some of these concepts, where he is just a master of his craft. And because especially they have Ja'Marr Chase, where they can move him around a little bit and they can get good matchups for him and get him in spaces where they like, it is a real opportunity for them to just, I don't want to say steal yards, but as close as you can realistically in the NFL to guaranteeing positive outcomes. Cincinnati has the ability to do that. Now, the way to disrupt that is, I don't know, pass rushing defensive tackles who arrive at the quarterback very quickly. And in theory, Washington has that. And they have it going up against a Cincinnati O-line that is a little hit or miss week to week in terms of their performance. And so I would like to explore a little bit of what Dan Quinn had to say today, starting with how he's, because I think the notion in the fan base is that, and frankly amongst a lot of media as well, and to some extent my hand goes up here, John Allen, Daron Payne certainly haven't played up to their paychecks, but have they truly played poorly? Here's Dan Quinn today at the podium on just how his two star defensive tackles have played so far this season.
Yeah, through the first two, I definitely know their presence inside. Some games you get more chances to rush and some games you don't. So what we want to always make sure is we're finding the matchups when we can and get into some drop back stuff. Sometimes when you have the production they've had, other people go into the game saying, okay, these two are not going to ruin the game as well. So a little bit of both, but yeah, we're definitely looking forward to them for this week and really you know, making their impact. And they want that too.
I don't think that they've played with particularly poor effort. I don't think that they've played with particularly poor, like, technique on a down-in, down-out basis. But clearly the production needs to grow for them in terms of what you're getting down-in, down-out. It's one thing to play okay as a defensive tackle and not accumulate a lot of stats on a lot of teams. Because realistically, a lot of times your job is to just eat double teams and let other guys make plays. But that's not how this defense is designed from a roster construction standpoint, right? It is really hard to play this way, and it's something that I want to talk about with Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team, who's been awesome with us the first 2 weeks. He's with us again coming up at 4:30. But when your roster is constructed for your defensive tackles to make plays, like, how does it affect how you actually perform as a defense? Because if you got playmakers at those positions, you want to just tell those guys, hey, eat double teams every single snap, and then let's let Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner make all the plays. Or, hey, we're going to rely on our edges to take advantage of their one-on-one matchups, because they're not going to win as often as premier edges, where if you have a guy who's just awesome at eating double teams and then can let the edges eat on the outside, that becomes a different equation. You know, that is something that is not new to NFL defenses. We've seen that with premier edges, you know, as long as any of us have been watching football. So if they're just going to eat these double teams and teams are going to plan on that being the case because they're going to double team them. Like, what does Dan Quinn do about that for John Allen and Daron Payne?
I want to be clear. I think what we're probably talking about first, John, is like first and second down, because the play pass, you can still do a double, but it's a run action. So I think when you're talking about trying to get four hands on them, that's, it didn't happen every snap, but that is something, you know, on the first and second downs, how do you beat it? Some blitzes where you're looping and getting outside. And so those are some of the ways that, that we do that. If we had actually, you know, gotten him down a few times in Tampa, I would say the conversation's probably a little bit different, but that's competing and that's ball. So what do we like to do? Get some on the move. That helps guys who have that kind of quickness for their size, and we'll continue to do that.
And that's the thing. From a double team standpoint, it's one thing if they're inside. And this is something that I expect now that Johnny Newton is his snap count is rising, and hopefully he is a bigger part of this defense moving forward. If you can have Newton, Allen, and Payne on the field at the same time, you can put one of those guys at an end, and now you can't double-team all of them. And they're going to have to start experimenting with some of this stuff in certain situations that it works. And a team like Cincy is really interesting to think about experimenting that, you know, that idea with, because they don't do a lot of the stuff that New York probably, or they probably won't do a lot of the stuff that New York did. Brian Daboll was like, we do not really trust Daniel Jones to read the field quickly, and we don't really trust our offensive line, and we don't have the horsepower to overcome bad situations. And so we're going to go seven-man protections. We're going to go a lot of play action. And the Bengals aren't going to do as much of that stuff if they stick to who they've been through the first two games of the season. It's going to look more like Tampa in terms of, you know, hey, against Tampa, the Commanders got pressure on like two-thirds of their the drop-back snaps. It was crazy how frequently they got pressure. Problem was they couldn't finish for a lick, and they got, I think, no sacks or one sack or whatever it was, and Baker absolutely diced them in second-play situations as he extended plays. And if you let Burrow do that, he will equally murder you, and you're going to give up damn near 40 points again. And so there are ways to scheme around some of this stuff. Some of this stuff is just going to be, hey, the back end has to hold up better. But I think this chess game is going to be ongoing, and I think that there are real opportunities against Cincy to try to get some of this right. The problem is, on the outside, you have Ja'Marr Chase going up against Will C, and, you know, because we just don't know who's going to play that other outside corner yet. And that part of the experiment, I feel... Not that I feel great about the interior and the line stuff, but that part of the experiment is clearly the part that I feel even worse about. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, more from Dan Quinn, talking about getting Terry McLaurin the football, amongst other things. And then coming up at 4:30, our guy Dan Pizzuta joins us. We are live at Capital One Arena, ahead of Mystics and Fever tonight on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Making our way through some of what Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels said today. And tomorrow morning in your podcast feeds, there will be a Take 5, which is the five-minute edition of Take Command, on whether or not Terry McLaurin should be getting more looks. Logan and I went into detail about how guys like Malik Nabers and Justin Jefferson and, I don't know, Jamar Chase, for some reason, was a name that was on that list. Those guys get moved around and they're able to get 10-plus targets a game on a regular basis, where we look at Terry McLaurin as the best receiver here and has been for a long time, and he very rarely crosses that threshold. He has about, you know, 15 or so times in his career, but certainly so far this season hasn't been the word I'll use is spammed. Right? You just be like, we're going to throw that guy the football a ton. There's been certainly a more concerted effort in week two than week one, but there has not been the game plan to just be like, we got to get 17 the ball with every 4 to 5 pass attempts in the way that Justin Jefferson gets it in Minnesota, in the way that oftentimes they will try to get that for Jamar Chase in Cincinnati. It looks like Malik Nabers is going to get that in New York this year. And so both Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn were asked about this today. Dan was actually asked about it by Ben Standig earlier in the week as well, and basically was like, you know, it wasn't so much about Terry, it was about you know, hey, how does a guy like Nabers get that, since Nabers had 18 targets on Sunday against Washington? And he was like, well, they move him around, there's a bunch of different stuff that they do, and that's how those guys tend to get that. But here's what he said from being asked more directly about Terry McLaurin potentially getting a lot more targets on Sunday and moving forward.
Tried to move Terry around into different spots, which, you know, is important because he is, you know, has that like playmaking ability. So you want to find the spots to go. As we're going just into our second, you know, full lap together, there'll be more ops for him than we need them to be. What you don't want to do is force the ones that aren't there and make sure, even though in a certain route, he may be the primary read, but if that one's taken away, that you don't force that one and go to somewhere else. I really respect that about Jaden, of making good processing decisions. Sometimes you have a play design that's, you know, going to go to one place and it's not there. So the worst thing you could do is try to force something in that's not there. And so I'm pleased that we're not doing that. Do we want to get him involved? Man, you bet, in the biggest way. And so the catch and run opportunities, I thought we had, you know, one or two chances that we didn't go his way. One we had a penalty on that I thought on a trap pass, I think Nick might have been down the field on a slant. That was going to be a big place. That one doesn't count as one of the targets to go.
The thing that's unsaid there is Terry is not, and I would not expect Dan to say this unless he was really, really frustrated, but you don't talk about your own players this way. And I hate talking about Terry this way too, because Terry's stand-up guy who I've really enjoyed covering and talking to over, you know, since his rookie year when I was still on the beat. One of the few guys I can say that about that's still around. But I don't expect his teammates to say this. Maybe Terry would say it about himself, but he'd be, you know, say it in the frame of he's working on always getting better at it. He's just not those guys. And the very specific quality that he does not have that JJ and Nabers and Chase and some of these other guys, I mean, even a guy like Nacua or Kupp in LA, who have gotten enormous numbers of targets over the years, like, those guys have a short area quickness that opens up their route tree from the slot. They have, this year, move Terry around a little bit. I know he lines up on the left the predominant number of times, but again, left is a direction, and even when he's outside, he's maybe outside as part of a stack or a bunch, but he's just the outermost left guy. So some of the charts are a little misleading, but they have moved him inside of the slot. They have moved him to the other side of the field. They have put him tight to line. There was one play that I saw and I was like, who just chipped the defensive? Did Terry just chip the defensive end? He was lined up as a de facto tight end. So they've moved him around a little bit, but when he's in there, he's still running a lot of vertical type routes because that's what he's great at. It's okay, let's get Terry in the slot and have him run a deep over. because he can run past people, and he will run with power through contact in the middle of the field and can get to a spot. And if you can get him matched up on a linebacker, then that's a great matchup, or a safety, that's a great matchup. But it's not the same as like, hey, let's get Justin Jefferson in the slot and know that he's going to shake someone at the top of his route 12 yards in, and then you hit him on an in cut and timing, and that's reliably open. Terry's not an exceptional separator. Again, great contested catch guy, super dangerous with the ball in his hands. I would like to see like some pop passes and some end arounds and like find ways to get the ball in his hands reliably without him having to get open. But when it comes to the qualities that Terry has, and you compare that to some of the other elite wide receivers who do get this, let's call it spam treatment, he's just not that elite of a separator. It's something he's gotten better at over the years, and it's something that, you know, if you're a quarterback and you develop a trust with Terry, you understand the timing, you can, like, he will win. You just got to make sure the timing is right, because it's not going to be quite as risk-free as a guy like Jefferson, who's obviously the very, very best in football. I believe Jaden Daniels talked about this as well today. Here's the man who actually has to pull the trigger to Terry, whether you know, it's one of those easy, quick design screens or reading something out down the field.
Yeah, I mean, go out there and pick the spots. I mean, you know, obviously we got to get Terry the ball. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to spread the ball around. Defenses are going to key on Terry, respectfully, respect to him, because of what he did in his league. But at the end of the day, man, when it's time and we have a one-on-one matchup, you know, sometimes, I mean, Terry's out there, you know, go let him win. But other than that, you know, we're just going to keep playing our game. We're going to keep moving forward and just go from there.
I do think in some situations, Ant, I wonder if did Taylor leave one of those T-shirts around somewhere? Maybe just, you know, in the equipment room somewhere, one of the equipment guys can dust off an old Bleep It Terry's Down There Somewhere T-shirt that Taylor Heinicke had.
One of those.
Yeah, because at some point at the end of the day, like, it's 3rd and 15, like, we can throw it down to Terry. Sure, arm punt. It's actually something Burrow's great at, by the way. He's like, it's 3rd and 15. If I get sacked, who cares? Like, let's make a play. And, you know, Burrow's excellent at that, and something that Jaden is certainly not afraid of a one-on-one matchup. But I also think that's a good point by Jaden, too, in terms of the attention paid to Terry and how it affects other guys. Because, you know, something that Logan said when we were talking about this morning is Malik Nabers getting 18 targets on Sunday wasn't actually a good thing for the Giants offense. It was a sign that they were forcing it and that nobody else could win. I'd much rather see Terry with 9-8 targets than 15, and Zach Ertz getting his, and Austin Eckler getting his, and a Deami Brown or a Noah Brown or a whoever else getting theirs, because I think that is actually the sign in this style of offense that the ball is getting where it needs to go, and it's that's just a much healthier sign of the offense. I also think, for whatever it's worth, they're going to run the heck out of the ball on Monday night in terms of attempts, as long as the game flow doesn't get out of whack, because Cincinnati's had a lot more trouble with the run. So we're going to spend all this time talking about how to get the football to Terry, and then they're just going to hand the ball off to Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler a ton, and that's probably the better path for Sunday. Something we should talk about tomorrow is there's more commentary and some more reporting from, you know, everyone from like Mike Wilbon on PTI to Mike Sando, who's kind of a more, you know, high intellect football reporter in The Athletic, talking about these rookie quarterbacks playing. And I think that's something we continue to dive into is Jaden and Caleb Williams and Bo Nix all get more reps this season. And two of the three are struggling, and Jaden's ceiling has only been so high so far. Although I do think he is very well set up to continue to grow in the situation he's in. But with the Bryce Young thing, I think a lot more people are looking at how young quarterbacks are coming along in the league. And that's that on top of something that I want to, you know, double click on tomorrow, something that we'll talk about with Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And it is Thursday, which means it is time to visit with our friend Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. Dan, what's up? How are you this week?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well as well. I'm sitting in a basketball arena that's going to be empty for the next 2 hours until it goes nuts when Caitlin Clark and company are here tonight. So it's always just fun to the first couple hours of our show when we're on remote, and it's like, oh, yeah, there's nobody here yet. But eventually, the distractions of human beings walking around and looking at me like I'm a zoo animal, they are coming, Dan. They are coming.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun thing to be just kind of hanging out with nothing going on. I'm currently in an empty one-bedroom apartment, so I have the same feeling, I guess.
Yeah, I hope there's not hordes of people eventually coming to where you are, because that'd be weird, Dan. Frankly, that's what that would
not,
be.
I also hope not. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So I wanted to, of course, talk a little Commanders, but also talk about some of the biggest stories around the league. And I actually think one of the biggest stories of the league this week kind of folds into the story of the year in Washington, which is how you develop and bring along a young quarterback. And Bryce Young's benching gets a lot of attention, and rightfully so, because he's a number one overall pick who has now been benched two games into and going into week three of his rookie season. Clearly, the atmosphere, the kind of things that you need to incubate and insulate and ultimately develop a young quarterback were not there in Carolina. Meanwhile, you look at the approach that Chicago's taken with Caleb and the approach that Washington's taken with Jaden, and I think they're, you know, very different approaches. When you try to parse out what is worth doing with a young quarterback early, what is not, like what are kind of your no-fly zones, like how do you start to think about situationally developing a young quarterback and what works and what doesn't?
Yeah, it certainly just kind of depends on what the situation is going to be and what kind of environment you are putting that quarterback in. And I think the thing for Bryce Young, which it just kind of turned out, was there was really no set trait that he was able to lean on to get him through some of the tougher times. And when he kind of came out of the draft, you kind of hoped you were banking on some of the creativity he had, some of the accuracy. But as the game kind of sped up for him at the NFL level, those things just, one, weren't NFL caliber and certainly weren't plus traits that were going to be able to kind of bring him forward. So that's kind of one of the hard things. And when you're going on, you know, an outlier like he was in terms of, you know, size, he kind of needed one of those things to really break through in order for, you know, especially in the situation they had in Carolina, to kind of make up for the lack of talent they had. But you see, Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, I think both of those guys right now do have some kind of skill. Caleb, I think it's still his creation. He's still very good at the line of scrimmage, and he's not getting helped out a lot by the supporting cast, the interior offensive line specifically. But I still think that's going to allow him to be able to develop while he's playing. I think Jaden Daniels right now, he has his legs, which is just something that he's going to be able to make plays happen and not make plays worse when they're still kind of figuring out what this passing offense is going to be. So I think when you just kind of have these, you know, younger quarterbacks, you just kind of have to know they have something right now where when the speed of the game is a little too much, what they're falling back on is not going to be a detriment to what they're doing. And I think we saw it definitely was with Bryce Young, but I think Caleb and Jaden and some of these other younger quarterbacks, we do see that they have something that's going to, you know, allow them to keep their head above water.
Yeah, it is the kind of thing where you just need to have some kind of floor. And for Jaden, the floor is built in. He can scramble and he can get out of dodge. And for Caleb, there's the creativity. Although, you know, obviously he hasn't had exactly a stellar two first games this season. So perhaps there is, you know, I think that they maybe have put too much on Caleb's plate in Chicago. And that goes all the way back to how they've kind of handled the job of, they just handed everything to him, didn't necessarily have a bunch of veterans around. It's kind of like, hey, dude, you know, we saw it on Hard Knocks. Like, I don't know how many head coaches around the league are meeting with their quarterbacks, especially their young quarterbacks, one-on-one multiple times throughout training camp, where here it was like, hey, dude, you're going to have to beat out Marcus Mariota. Wasn't exactly the world's greatest challenge, but Jaden had to actually go through that process. With Young, like, how do you think it got beyond, I guess, the obvious, which, sorry to take the obvious off the table, of the talent around him wasn't good. How did it get this bad where he almost feels like ruined and unsalvageable already, and we're not even, you know, a quarter into his second season?
Yeah, it was just one of those things where, because he was such this outlier, he was a small and skinny quarterback. And it's a thing where we have seen those kinds of guys work in the past, but you have a Kyler Murray who just has just unbelievable agility and has a huge arm. Same thing was going with Russell Wilson back when he came in Seattle. Smaller quarterback, but the sticker, still able to move, had one of the strongest arms in the league. Like, he's still, right now, when he cannot move, still has one of the prettiest deep balls when it is working, at least from the last thing we saw when he was playing last year. That was kind of the one thing that was working a little bit. But with Bryce Young, there was just no physical trait that ended up being something that he could lean on when things were going wrong. The accuracy wasn't there. The creativity that he was able to do at Alabama. At Alabama, he was able to kind of scramble. It always seemed like he was a step ahead of the defense. He kind of knew where to go. And those things just weren't happening in Carolina. So when there weren't easy answers built into the offense, he didn't have anything that he could lean on, you know, just on his own to be able to make something happen. And I think as that continued to progress last year, he got less and less confident in trying to create for himself. And then it really just ended up being a lot of panic in the pocket. And that's how just things kind of started to snowball a little bit. And they did not get better this year. And I think they kind of got worse. And when things started to go wrong, I think they get a little bit worse for him. So whether this is a break that's needed and something he can eventually bounce back from, maybe somewhere else, because it doesn't seem like it's going to be a good situation really in Carolina to continue going forward. But he just kind of needs to reset, I think, and they need to figure out what his fallback on. You kind of need a trump card a little bit, especially when you are, you know, that type of size outlier. He doesn't have the strongest arm. He doesn't have the pinpoint accuracy of like a Tua, who doesn't have the strongest arm, right? There's just no outstanding trait that has showed up so far for him in the NFL, and it's going to be real tough to play quarterback that way.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, with us here on the Hoffman Show. With us every Thursday, and you can read his work, of course, at the 33rd team. All right, from the like really insightful analysis, Dan, to what we really live for in sports radio land, fake trades. If you could real trade Bryce Young somewhere, and especially I think, you know, you mentioned Tua, Miami comes up a lot because we don't know Tua's future. I've seen some like wacky three-team trades with Matthew Stafford going to Miami, going around. Like, is there any system or family of schemes or somewhere that if you could trade Bryce Young there right now, to that in 3 years Bryce Young's a good NFL quarterback, and so I'm even giving you like trade him to LA, let him sit behind Stafford. Like, where would you send Bryce Young if you could wave a magic wand and send Bryce Young somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be something like that, where you would, you know, trade him to Rams with McVay, or at San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan, give him the Sam Darnold treatment for a year behind Brock Purdy with Kyle Shanahan, kind of get him in one of those offenses. Yeah, I mean, like, Miami, it could work again, but I don't think he has, like, I think what Mike McDaniel has done so good with, too, is really brought his strengths out with that offense. And I think, you know, when that offense was working, when Tua was on the field, like, his ability to get the ball out quickly played as big of a role in that offense as the speed of the receivers. Like, everyone was working at the same pace. And I think we've kind of seen when, you know, some other quarterbacks come in Miami, it doesn't work quite as well, especially with that offensive line, because that offensive line is not good right now. So other quarterbacks being behind there who don't have that quick processing, that is going to become a detriment. I'm really interested to kind of see what this Miami offense does look like going forward with a non-Tua quarterback behind there. So I would trust Mike McDaniel to kind of to bring him along. I don't think it's necessarily like you think it's a plug and play, because they have such great wide receivers. But it would be one of those guys that you kind of just trust to develop a quarterback, whether it be a McVay or a Shanahan. But I'm not sure any one of those teams is really, you know, jumping at the bit right now to be, you know, trading for Bryce Young and kind of bring him in. I think there's, if they need a, you know, developmental prospect, they can probably take one, you know, later in the draft next year. So it's a tough situation of where, you know, Young and the Panthers are going to be trying to figure out how to move forward.
Definitely going to be interesting. Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. So we see, meanwhile, with the young quarterback playing, as well as any of the young quarterbacks in this rookie class here in D.C. with Jaden Daniels, they get their first win on Sunday over the Giants. And I think there has been a little bit of frustration amongst national folks and certainly even amongst local fans about not opening up the offense more. We know Jaden's a great deep ball thrower. I can certainly point to some reasons why I think that's happening, and I don't even mind it, especially when you get a win like they did on Sunday. But when you watch them and Cliff try to walk that line of letting Jaden do some of the things that we know he's great at vertically down the field and also making sure that he's protected in the short term and they're getting the ball out of his hands and all that kind of stuff, how do you think that they're managing him so far through two games? And what have you seen in terms of growth or change in that from game one to game two?
Yeah, it certainly is a bit frustrating when you are looking at it from the outside. I think there's, you know, we talked about this earlier, where there's still kind of the PTSD a little bit of watching the Cliff Kingsbury offense that we saw was very horizontal at times in Arizona, especially when you had a guy like Kyler Murray who could also, you know, throw deep. So it's a lot of, you know, the screens and the flats, and that is kind of frustrating to see a little bit over the stretch. But, you know, I do think they are kind of starting to open things up a little bit. I think my hesitation right now with the offense, and, you know, Jaden Daniels has been a great scrambler, and that's kind of how they have gotten most of their big plays so far, is when Daniels is getting out of the pocket, he's able to run, and those have been very positive plays. The interesting thing, though, is when, and it's kind of my hesitation on Daniels as a player kind of going back through college, when he gets out of the pocket, he is looking to run. He is not one of these guys that is kind of keeping his eyes downfield and looking for something to open up further down the field. I shared something on Twitter, I think, the other day. Jaden Daniels right now has the third most plays that have ended outside the pocket, but has the third fewest pass attempts. And that is something, it has been working so far to be a positive, but if that offense is going to open up and Jaden Daniels is going to be one of these guys who can, you know, create plays outside of structure, I think kind of that the passing game needs to be working when he is on the run, and he's someone who's just been very hesitant to do that so far. And again, it hasn't been a detriment to the offense yet, but I think that is something that I would like to see them work on and be something that they do focus on. I think there was a play to, you know, Zach Ertz that ended up later in the second half against the Giants, and like that's kind of what you want him to see. He gets out of the pocket, is able to see something happen, develop down the field, and he gets a big open play. So those are the things I would kind of like to see going forward in the offense, because I think structurally, you know, those plays in structure, they are eventually going to open up a little bit more. But for this offense to really, I think, get its full potential, you kind of want to see Jaden Daniels make some of these throws on the run like he should be able to do with his athleticism and his arm.
That is such a great call, and that stat is really astounding. The third most plays ending outside the pocket, third fewest throws. Now, if you didn't mention it, I was going to, that play to Ertz, and if he can do that more often, that's great. I think the other part of that, I'll shout out my pal Mark Bullock, who does a great job with his Substack and the film breakdowns. You know, Mark highlighted a play the other day where if Jaden, it's a red zone play, and it should have been a touchdown to Terry McLaurin. They got the coverage look they wanted, but there was a little bit of pressure, and Jaden took off and tried to scramble. I think he winds up throwing the ball away or maybe even taking a sack kind of at the line of scrimmage. But if he has, instead of taking off running, he just sidesteps in the pocket, takes a step up, resets his feet, it's an easy touchdown. So that ability to not drop his eyes and you know, watch what's going on downfield and make those plays, I think is a great shot by you. If, you know, especially since, Dan, the Commanders fans don't have a game to watch on Sunday because they're playing on Monday night this week, who are the quarterbacks that you think do that the best in the league? That if fans are like, hey, quit yelling about our guy. Okay, fine. What are you talking about? Who are the guys that do that the absolute best in the league that people can watch on Sunday and see examples of that?
Yeah, I think you have, you know, the mobile guys like, Josh Allen obviously is going to be up there. He kind of is one of those guys who can, you know, when he is outside of the pocket, probably makes decisions that most quarterbacks probably shouldn't. But he is always kind of looking for something to happen downfield. I think that he had a throw on Thursday night that ended up being a deep throw to the running back when he was out of the pocket. There was like an easy throw that he could have made that would have just been a first down. But he has whatever's going on in Josh Allen's brain. It's just like, no, I should probably throw to this running back. He's now running deep down the field. So he ends up doing that. But Kyler is great at this also. He is one of these guys who is a scrambler, but he is also always looking to throw down the field. I think Lamar is similar. When he does have the opportunity to throw, I think Baltimore's offense is kind of not what we had hoped it might have been, you know, coming into the season, coming off last season with the offensive coordinator change. But these are still guys that are looking to throw first when they're on the run and then take off and pass the line of scrimmage once that's kind of their last option. So I think when you have like those mobile quarterbacks like that, like those are the kind of guys that you would kind of hope Jaden ends up kind of, you know, playing more like, at least, you know, with his creativity outside the pocket going forward.
Yeah, obviously you throw Mahomes in that bucket as well, because if there's anything right. a quarterback can do and it's good, Patrick Mahomes goes in the bucket. Dan Pizzuta with us here on the Hoffman Show. One more thing I wanted to touch on with you, Dan, is on the defensive side. Obviously there's been a lot of disappointment with the production from John Allen and Daron Payne, supposedly excellent players who combined last weekend for two tackles total. Both of them were by Allen. Payne had nothing. So is it just too easy, like as you watch other teams around the league that have defensive tackle or defensive tackles as kind of the centerpieces as opposed to really talented, highly compensated edge players, is it a disadvantage to have your defense built from the inside out that way because of what offenses can do double teaming them and some of the positions they find themselves in versus a guy who plays in a little bit more space?
Yeah, I think it depends. I think it depends on, especially one, how good those interior defensive players are. You know, the Rams built an entire defense around Aaron Donald being great and destroying guards inside. The same thing, I think, is true with the Chiefs and Chris Jones. I think with Washington right now, it is easy kind of to focus on the interior of that defensive line and make sure that is not really causing havoc, because you still kind of have questions on what is happening on the edge. And I think Washington does make it a little easier to do that because, one, they don't really have the edge presence that would make teams kind of worry. And the way I think they're going about some of their pass rush things, when they are trying to, you know, disguise what they're doing on defense, a lot of it is in the back end. I think they have one of the highest rates of you know, disguise coverages, whether they're going from a single high safety to two high or two high to single high. They're not doing a lot of that around the line of scrimmage, which I think we're seeing a lot of these, you know, new age defenses kind of do right now. Seattle's doing a lot of that. New England's doing a lot of that, where you're either, you know, using, you know, you're putting five or six guys around the line of scrimmage and you don't know exactly which four guys are going to rush. So Washington's trying to blitz a lot to create that, but they're not really disguising it. They're trying to use a lot of stunts, but then they don't have the coverage to hold up. So by the time those stunts are happening, the ball's out and the coverage has already kind of been picked apart. So there's just a lot of moving pieces right now that I think it is hard for one individual, especially there are two individuals on that interior defensive line, to really, like, they need to be blowing past guards, I think, like right off the snap, in order for them to be making the type of impact you would hope. And that's all really hard thing to ask of a player like that.
Right, and then they've done that some, and then New York, thinking about Dable and Buffalo, but New York and Tampa have done a really good job of being like, okay, cool, you want to blow off the line of scrimmage? We'll run draw right by you, and thanks for taking yourself out of the play. Now we don't have to worry about you, or we're gonna hit you with a wham or a trap, and that's gotten them on some bigger run plays. So hopefully it'll come together quickly, Dan. Otherwise, we're going to just ask a bunch of questions about sad defense all year, and we've done that for too many years here, frankly. So I think we've earned a change, is basically what I'm telling you, Dan.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, I think it is, again, like we kind of talked about, I think the first time, it's not miscommunication, which isn't working, which I think is a little bit of more optimism, right? I don't, maybe it's not quite as optimistic if the talent just isn't there. But I think structurally, they mostly know what they're doing. You just kind of hope that everything comes together and the execution just comes together a bit more as we go forward.
Yeah, definitely. And the more reps they have together, theoretically, it gets better. But we'll see. Certainly a different kind of challenge Monday night against Cincinnati. Dan Pizzuto writing about everything NFL-wide at the 33rd team. Dan, really great stuff again, and we will talk to you next Thursday. Thank you.
All right, great. Sounds good. Thanks. Appreciate it.
That is Dan Pizzuto, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, as we are live at Capital One Arena ahead of the Mystics and Fever tonight, one last game of the WNBA season to decide the eighth and final playoff spot, one final game for Caitlin Clark on the Fever side of it to set whatever record she's going to set tonight, extend all the records that she's already broken. We will talk about all of that and WNBA expansion, and it looks like Diana Taurasi is retiring. So plenty of news, notes, information, things to discuss with our guy Kareem Copeland of the Washington Post. And I do think he's going to come by next. Although, Anthony, I had a horrible realization as we were talking to Dan, which is that there might be a press conference happening right now, and I never 100% confirmed with Kareem for 5 o'clock. So there's a chance that we do something else next, but it's probably Kareem. So that's what's next, Kareem, or something else. Are you excited?
My ears definitely perked up. So I'm intrigued to see what actually transpires.
Also, you're like, I produced the show. I might have to come up with something else. So
yes.
Now I'm just watching the wheels turn in Anthony's head. So hopefully Kareem comes, because then we don't have to deal with it. Also still to come today, Pick 6 at 6, top Commanders headlines coming up at 6 o'clock. Never read the comments today as well. Oh, what a doozy. When we have calls from like Mark and Largo and Gary in Upper Marlboro, and those go on the internet, Anthony, the comments section, it's a fun one. So we'll get to that coming up at 5:30, or perhaps next, because if Kareem's not here, we'll just move the rundown around. So basically, don't go anywhere, and you don't miss any of it. That's how this show works. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, and we're always live as well on the free Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.